And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, Dave, I don't think we have to look too far afield to know what we should be concerned about this week. The Trump indictment.
Self-evident.
But I'm not really interested in the details of the indictment, as important as they may be, as much as what you think of is the going to be the political significance of the indictment.
Yeah. It's unfortunately a test of or evidence of what American politics has become. If this had happened in the not too distant past and a former political leader was charged with what Donald Trump is being charged with, and the evidence that's come forward so far of this, there would have been pretty close to unanimity as to the response, and it would have been a negative response towards Trump. It would have been the national security comes first, or at the very least, it would have been let's wait and see what else occurs. What's happened, though, is with this MAGA base and the cult that's grown up around Trump, the political courage, if there ever was such in the Republican Party, and I think there was, has greatly been abandoned. And the political leaders of the party, with certain exceptions, have decided that their best course is to not only defend Donald Trump, but to attack the entire process and attack the prosecutor on this thing. This is what you see if you follow the people that I follow, you know, who talk about neo-fascism and authoritarianism and things. This is what you see happens in those countries. This is not a defense of democracy. And I would remind people that all of these political leaders, the ones that have taken the oath of office, have taken an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and against enemies foreign and domestic. And their oaths seem to mean nothing to them. This is more of the same, the power game, even though that they know in many cases that they're wrong. You know, we've always talked about who actually knows what they're doing is wrong and who doesn't know. You know, separating the Kevin McCarthys from the Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert types of people. So, you know,
my own feeling is that this indictment means that Trump gets the nomination of the Republican Party. He can't be stopped, and he can't win the election. I think that's what this. I think that's the political effect of this whole process.
I would tend to agree with that. You know, he's just been running away with the. With the nomination, and of course, with more people in the process running for, and you wonder why they're doing this, knowing what the polls have been showing. Why are they? You've seen. I mean, there's speculation that Chris Christie, who got into the race this week, and he's one of those that's critical of Trump. I mean, he's the one that's really. You know, the question is he in it to win it, or is he in it just to derail Trump? Okay. But with the exception of him, the you know, the others. I mean, what is the governor of North Dakota? What's his name? Ralph Borgram or something like that?
He doesn't have a name. He's an unknown person.
He's an unknown person. What is he doing, you know, entering the race?
He's living the American dream.
The American dream, you know. Yeah. Does he think he can raise money off of this? Is he trying to get some sort of a gig on Fox? You just
but
want,
you could
I
ask mean, that same question about Nikki Haley or Tim Scott or Ramaswamy or whatever his name is.
VTech. Well, I'll tell you, some of those are running for vice president. I think Tim Scott definitely is running for vice president. Haley, I'm not quite so sure about, but I think somebody would want to be on the ticket there. Elise Stefanik, who isn't in the race, but who's, you know, gone over to the dark side very heavily. You know, I think she would like to be on the ticket with Trump. In that respect,
she can do it now that he lives in Florida.
Yes, yeah, yeah. You know, DeSantis can't.
No, they're both from Florida.
Yeah. By the way, I saw that somebody sent me a thing, you know, with DeSantis, and of course, he's been completely overshadowed over the last several days. His momentum is stalled, but someone said, you know, all the drag queens in Florida ought to all change their name to Rhonda Santis. You know, it's sort of in mockery of him. I thought that was very clever. You know, they all have pseudonyms as their names.
Right.
But, you kind of wonder. And of course, Kevin McCarthy continues to grovel. And it's partly because...
Well, you've heard of leading from behind.
Yeah.
He leads from the bottom.
Yeah, from the there is no bottom, basically. I said when he was elected. Remember, we were in England when he was elected to be the Speaker of the House. We're watching the spectacle from afar, and the befuddlement of the Europeans on these 15 votes. And I said that he wanted to be Speaker in the worst way, and he got his wish.
He got it.
He became Speaker in the worst possible way.
That's right.
And his right flank was not happy. He lost 70 people when they had the vote on the budget deal. And so what they've been doing over the last week is tying him up. He wanted to pass certain legislation, and he can't get it passed because the conservatives won't go along with him. He doesn't have the votes. So the House has been doing nothing.
Well, that's a step forward for the American people. The less those people do, the better off we all are.
Yeah, well, what was it Will Rogers or Mark Twain that said the American people's liberty is never in greater danger than when the legislature is in session? I can't remember which of those said that, but yeah, I mean that's the one thing that when the Republicans are in leadership have the votes. I mean, bad stuff happens.
That's right. The Republicans' response to the Trump indictment is what dooms the rest of the candidates because they. They feel the need to defend him. They feel the need to attack the justice system, which they're supposed to defend.
Right, right. They said.
I mean, it's one thing if some left-wing revolutionary came up and said the system is unjust and made some kind of cogent argument about that, but these people are not that. These people are people who are defending that system, except when it attacks them.
Yeah, and... I'm disappointed in some ways that when they get interviewed, someone don't go after them and say, well, let, you know.
Well, what they say is totally wrong. I mean, the standard argument that they make is this is an attack on democracy. This is, we'll be a banana republic if this happens. A banana republic? The last president of France was indicted. The president of France before that last president of France was indicted. The prime minister of Italy was indicted. The prime minister of Israel served time in jail, 13 months for corruption.
The current one is on
trial. The current one is in fourth year of trial, right? These banana republics?
Yeah. Actually, it would be a banana republic if he wasn't charged.
That's exactly right.
You know,
a banana republic is a republic controlled by corporate interests, right? But not local corporate interests. Banana republic meant, you know, the Dole Company in Central America. That was the definition of banana republic.
United Fruit.
United Fruit. Yeah, sorry, not Dole.
Dole's out in Hawaii.
Yeah.
But anyhow, but the thing is, what do you expect if there is evidence of criminal conduct? Who do you expect to do you expect the Justice Department to do nothing? Who do you expect to try these things? The Trump Justice Department, Bill Barr. And by the way, Bill Barr has come out and said that he believes that Trump has done things wrong.
Well, Bill Barr just about said it's open and shut.
Yeah. Well, that's, of course, his motive is to try to resurrect his image, which is he can't do. He can't do. But
like you've often said, even a stop clock is right twice a day.
Yes. And, he's after these things. Yeah. Remember, Trump started out, he said that he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and he wouldn't lose any support.
And he may be right. But, of course, that's different than whether he's going to go to jail.
Yes. And the question is, well, you might not lose support, but wouldn't you expect someone to prosecute him for doing that?
Yeah. Well, he didn't.
No.
That said, if he doesn't lose support, and he's not losing support, if he doesn't lose support, doesn't that indicate that the romantic view of the Republican Party, that somehow there's a shadow party out there waiting to step forward, is false? There is no such shadow party. The Republican Party is the Trump Party. There is no other Republican Party.
Yeah, certainly Rona McDaniel isn't going to lead the charge against him.
She's not going to lead the charge against him, and Ms. Cheney is not going to organize a new party.
No. No.
And if she would organize a new party, it would be in the image of Dick Cheney, which is, God knows, no better than Trump. Maybe not as corrupt in the same way, corrupt in a different way.
Right. But at least she'd uphold the Constitution in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah, in that regard. In that regard. But her father, well, I don't want to blame her for her father, although she supported him all the way. Her father, with his notions of the unitary executive, the fact the legislature had no role to play, that's hardly upholding the Constitution.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen the Constitution under attack. You know, this is certainly one of the ways that it was, under Trump. But we also have some other pending stuff. We still have the Fannie Willis stuff in Georgia, which was an attack on the Constitution, trying to change the vote, setting up these phony electors. I've always thought that phony elector stuff was also pretty open and shut.
Well, she says she's going to have something
in August,
right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Under state law, and apparently it's expanded. It might be a multi-state thing, and there have been other places where they tried this. Michigan was one where they had phony electors. Pennsylvania, they had phony electors. The only thing in Pennsylvania, they said they made it conditional. they said something if this occurs. You know, if Pence did what said that there was. That he wouldn't count the Pennsylvania electors, that they would be willing to step in. But that's,
does that absolve them?
Is that a what?
Does that absolve them?
It makes it a little closer, issue, but no, it doesn't absolve them, because what they should be doing is saying, Joe Biden won the state by 80,000 votes, and he gets to pick the electors.
Yeah.
He gets to pick the electors.
I mean, it's no different than I get up in the morning and I say, I'll be the elector.
Right. You know, but we're talking about the Republican Party assault on democracy. We've seen it in the voting patterns, the voting rules, the voting, the ways to disenfranchise people. We had a week or so ago what happened in Texas, where they decide we're going to put someone in above the local officials in Harris County, Houston, the largest place where, you know, Democrats, more Democrats
they
vote
did it
than
in,
anywhere else.
They did it in Mississippi, with Jackson, Mississippi.
Yes, they did. They've tried to do it in other places. And, of course, you know, the original way was to gerrymander, which they did in North Carolina very successfully. And then they took over the state Supreme Court and undid the invalidating of their gerrymandering. And then they've got, we just had a case, though, this week down in Alabama, which kind of shocked people. You know, there's different ways of gerrymandering districts. There's one way of it's sort of dividing up your opponent's vote into a multiple districts, so that each district has a small proportion of them, and so you dilute the vote. The other way is packing, where you put all of your opponents into one district and take them out of all the other districts. And in Alabama, they had a situation where they packed black votes into one district, and where they really, there would have been two districts that would have had a black significant black vote. And lo and behold, the Supreme Court said the way Alabama did it was wrong. Interestingly, that Roberts wrote the decision, because he's been the father of invalidating or validating the Republicans on the Voter Rights Act, of invalidating the Voter Rights Act.
So why do you think he did that?
That's a good question. That's a good question. Don't forget, Brett Kavanaugh went along with him. He's been under a lot of pressure. The Supreme Court has been... And he in particular have taken it on the chin about their ethics, about the way they do things with the shadow docket. His reputation has been tattered. And he might have felt, well, this is a cheap and easy way of me, getting some of my, I don't know what it's called, honor or something, my reputation back. And, you figure one state, Alabama, wouldn't matter too much. Although this can be used in other states, in Louisiana and in other places as well.
I see that people who study this kind of thing said that immediately it could result in the Democrats getting four seats that they deserve anyway, but that they were gerrymandered out of. Well, the Republicans only have a 10-seat majority. That would bring them down to what, six seats?
They don't have a 10-seat majority. They only have a 5-seat.
Oh, a 5-seat. Just bring down to 1 seat. I'm sorry.
Don't they have somebody that's resigning from Congress?
Well, probably, but that happens all the time.
Yeah, and of course we don't know what's going to happen with George Santos.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know, the Alabama case was hardly an expansion of democracy. It was merely not permitting a further restriction of democracy.
Right.
Since the Voting Rights Act was passed in the 1960s, it's been progressively weakened by the Supreme Court and also by the Congress.
And especially by Roberts.
And especially, well, Roberts has been the leader of the judicial weakening of the Voting Rights Act.
Yeah,
but the most important weakening of the Voting Rights Act was brokered by Bob Dole when he was the Republican leader in the Senate. And they weakened it so that proportional representation is explicitly outlawed by the Voting Rights Act. Now, there can't be anything more democratic than proportional representation. Here's a Voting Rights Act that outlaws it. So, it's not like that the Roberts and Kavanaugh people expanded democracy. It just didn't restrict it any further. So the question I have is, why didn't they restrict it further? And my guess is because they're planning to get rid of affirmative action in education. And they want to be able to point to this so as to mitigate the bad response to that.
Yeah, I think that's a valid point. I think that that's a valid point. And it's interesting, of course, Clarence Thomas was on the wrong side of this 5-4 decision. But he's going to be on the wrong side of the affirmative action decision.
But he'll be in the majority there.
He will be in the majority. I'll be wondering if he writes the opinion.
Yeah.
On that. He's always one of these guys that professes that poor blacks ought to lift themselves up by their own bootstraps. He having been lifted up many times by others, having no, he just never looks back as to how he got to where he was.
Well, why should he look back?
Yeah, it's been very profitable. By the way, speaking of Clarence Thomas, the reports of the finances of the justices were supposed to come out this week. And Clarence Thomas and Alito both asked for extensions. Now, Thomas's past reports have been roundly criticized, and validly so, as not listing, for when he didn't list his wife's income. things that are really easy to know what he's supposed to do, and he just ignored this stuff, and he's been doing it for years. So it's going to be interesting as to whether he does any revisions retroactively, like people sometimes do on their taxes, or whether he's just going to, do something just from this year and forward. But the fact of the matter is that for some reason, he can't tell us about income and sources within the time limit that the other justices can. I think says something in itself.
Alito too, right?
Yeah, Alito too. I said that. Yeah, Alito. Yeah. And you wonder about that because Alito hasn't been the one that's been questioned as much as Kavanaugh and Roberts have been.
And maybe he's not quite as corrupt. Who knows? Who knows?
Well, but the issue is not relative corruption. The issue should be zero corruption in that position.
But has it ever been? You really don't know. But I mean, there's the famous case, not in the U.S. Supreme Court, but in the West Virginia Supreme Court, where the mining interests were concerned about which way the Supreme Court would go, so they bought themselves a couple of Supreme Court justices, right?
Yeah, and the Supreme Court of the United States actually invalidated that election.
Right.
That's there. By the way, talking about the corrupt or non-corrupt, this week, my friend Julia Munley, who's a judge on Lackawanna County, has been nominated by President Biden to fill a vacancy in the Middle District of Pennsylvania, the federal courts. She had her hearing this week, and it went very well. And her reputation is sterling.
So how's she going to get confirmed if her reputation is sterling? I don't get it.
Well, it was interesting because Lindsey Graham was on the committee, and he must have known something, but he brought up the name of Don McGahn. Now, Don McGahn is the guy that shepherded through all of the Federalist Society judges who were on the Supreme Court under Trump. Barrett, Kavanaugh, and Gorsuch. But interestingly enough, as Julia only said, he's my nephew.
Is that so?
Yes. He is her husband's, he's the son of her husband's sister. So she said that, and I think, that kind of shut the committee up. But there was an interesting thing in that hearing. I was listening to it. It was broadcast. You remember when they used to have the literacy tests?
Yep.
And what they would do down south under Jim Crow was they would ask, white people some very, very simple questions. Like, what's the first letter in the word Constitution or something, you know,
right.
absurd. But black people, they would ask, you know, some obscure question, you know, explain the Commerce Clause or mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. There was a there were four people who were in front of the panel this week. There was a woman but whose last name is Ali Khan, who was getting grilled like crazy. I don't know if that was her marriage name or if that was her birth name. And there was a black nominee. And, you know, Julia Munley was asked a fairly straightforward but simple question about removal, you know, where the federal court takes the case from the state court on motion. And she explained it well. I won't go into that. And then they asked the African American guy some really, really obscure question about the Dark Commerce Clause, which I had never even, you know, heard of. Mm-hmm. And boy, he had the answer. I'll tell you that. He was prepared. it had to do with interstate commerce and whether what one state could do with another state's commerce, but. It's not something that you regularly, you know, study in law school because it doesn't come up that often. But he had that. But I picked that up. I said, you know, there's the old system at work.
That's exactly right. That's the old system at work. Now, listen, let me ask you this very important question. Where do you stand on this? Should the United States invade Canada?
It didn't work out well in the War of 1812.
No. No. But can we tolerate bad air?
We can't tolerate bad air from wherever it comes. Right. And, this week it was really, really bad coming down from Canada. There were suggestions that we ought to, the Republicans were on message again saying, well, this is the fault of the social system in Canada because they spend so much money on social issues that they don't have enough money for forest management. In the past on...
But forest management is a social issue.
Well, of course. Donald Trump has suggested, going into Canada. The only invasion we had of Canada was when Joe Biden sent 600 firefighters. Right. And that's the way it should be.
But the real truth is that this is the climate crisis manifested for everybody.
Yeah, and I heard...
We in Northeast Pennsylvania, together with New York City, had the worst air on the planet for 4 days.
Yes, yes. And by the way, I was listening this week, and Michael Mann, who's a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, used to be at Penn State, he's the guy with the hockey stick about environment mm-hmm. and how pollution and is growing at a rapid rate. He was talking about, he said, this is just a precursor of what's going to happen, and it's going to happen in the East. He said things are going to get drier in the East. We're going to have these problems just like they have in California coming up with the temperatures of the are rising rapidly in the environment and in the East part of the United States, which really never had these problems. We've always had a lot of water because of the Great Lakes and the way the stuff comes up from the Gulf and things like that.
Well, this is it for this week.
Yeah.
We're running out of air and we've run out of time.
Well, we haven't run out of hot air from the Republicans.
No, we haven't. But that's what we don't need. The climate does not need more hot air. See you next week.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.